Well, this week went by fast.
The Committee on Higher Education and Workforce Development will now be in order. Today's date is Thursday, February 26th. So, members and those who are joining with us today, we do need to wait for a quorum. And so we appreciate people's patience. And again, we urge our members to come on time. So thank you all for being patient. Before we begin our proceedings today, I have a shadow with me, and Senator Kent also has a shadow. We're so pleased to have them. And so Hope Nuremberg, do you want to just stand up and say hello and say the organization you're here with?
I'm here with FCCLA, which is Family, Career, and Community Leaders of America. And we're a student-led organization with a central focus as family. We're just here shadowing to legislators and senators, trying to get to learn a little bit more about our government.
And they can attest that they don't get to even spend any time with their members because the pace is pretty quick here. So it is a pleasure to have you. Thank you. Senator Kent, you want to introduce yours?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Emily Erickson is here from Ortonville. And she spent part of the day with Senator Wieger, and now then she gets to hang out with me a little bit this afternoon. And we've had some good talks and a lot of conversation about how bills get passed.
Well, welcome. Anything you want to say? Okay. All right. So with that, I would ask Commissioner Pogemiller to approach the table. And Commissioner Pogemiller, we're pleased to be able to have you here with us today to be able to recommend your confirmation to the full Senate. And I just personally want to thank you for what you've brought to your role as commissioner, the leadership you provide, your responsiveness. You know, people don't always see what we know behind the scenes is, you know, you get called from us day, night, weekend. We have this question. We think we should do this. And you take every call and you actually bring more to it than what's asked of you. And, of course, your staff as well. And so, in my opinion, you've done an extraordinary job of leading at the Office of Higher Ed. And I certainly appreciated working with you when you were the majority leader and learning from watching you lead in that role, and so it's been an honor to work with you in this capacity. So, thank you. So,
thank you, Madam Chair. Maybe I better not say anything.
Commissioner Pogemiller.
Madam Chair, thanks for taking up the confirmation, and it's been an honor to serve in this capacity. It has been an adjustment from having been one of your colleagues, but it's been interesting, challenging, and I would say fun even, because you and the governor are investing in post-secondary education. That certainly makes it much more enjoyable than the alternative, which is budget reductions, which is what we did for a decade or so. Just briefly, the areas of focus that I've tried to bring to the office on behalf of the governor is first and foremost recalibration of the state grant and targeting it so it's most effective for the students who need some help in both their access and their choice of college. Secondly, there's, because of the work that your committee's been doing and others, this increased focus on data-driven decision-making through the statewide longitudinal educational data system. And as you know, we're making great progress there in terms of upgrading the amount of information we can provide for committees and governors across delivery systems, and we hope to do even more of that in the coming years so that you are comfortable that you are doing things based on information. A personal goal of mine has been to beef up the research capacity at the office, and one of those things has been to increase collaborations with DEED, Department of Ed, the Gates Foundation, etc. And to, in the next couple of years, probably have all PhD certified people who are our researchers. We have two of our staff people now are on the path to getting their doctorates, and so probably within 2 or 3 years, we will have all four of our researchers will have their doctorates.
Wow.
We know that the credential in and of itself is not that crucial. But in a world of post-secondary education, as you've learned, there's a PhD everywhere who comes up with a study on everything. And so we thought just for the state's capacity in terms of the research function, it would help to have the most top qualified people on our research staff. And we're very close to doing that. We've tried to beef up the family and student outreach of our agency by putting more emphasis in Greater Minnesota because of the more diverse populations that are showing up in Greater Minnesota. And we've tried to do much more work with families in conjunction with students at the middle school level and the high school level, because the research is indicating that just hooking the student in is not good enough. You need to get a family commitment to the path of post-secondary education, both in the choice of schools that the student goes to and the activities that go on once you get into college. There's a lot of evidence that without adequate family support or some adult support, it's really, really hard to get through. We've tried to beef up within our current resources, we've hired a consumer advocate whose entire job is to advocate on behalf of students and family who have concerns about whatever's going on in their post-secondary institution. And that's been quite an increase in activity. And we've tried to also try to provide more outreach to institutions on what best practices are with regards to their advertising, their financial aid discussion, et cetera. And we've made a lot of progress. And I don't know if we've had her before your committee. Has Betsy been here? We should, Madam Chair, at some point we should ask the consumer advocate to come in and visit with you about what she is learning about what's going on with students and families in post-secondary.
Commissioner Pogemiller, we would appreciate that. I wasn't aware of that position, and I often get complaints from students about their belief that they should have qualified for financial aid and were rejected, or, you know, lots of different things. So that'd be great. Thank you.
And then finally, I want to mention two areas where, while I've been there, we have not been, we've had missteps. And the two that I want to mention, we had, I think most members are aware, we had a data breach. Seems to me it was last September or so. And we were able to contain it. It was inadvertently found by a University of Minnesota student on our website. And we were so thankful the student called and said, "Do you know?" And we were able to contain it and have a successful, and it was something as simple as, it was a website that had been there for quite a bit of time, but a extra space in some programming created a situation where you didn't actually need the password to get in. And it was like, oh my gosh. And it potentially had exposed information, but we tracked it down. I will say that Minute, the state agency that deals with technology, did a fabulous job of forensics to figure out what happened, why did it happen, and who was affected. And we, in the end, ended up only, it could have been as many as 100,000 students. It turned out that we mailed to about 1,300 or 1,400 students. And it was very contained, and we don't think anything bad really happened. But the potential was there. And then finally, we had a hiccup in our communications area where you had passed a law to extend post-secondary enrollment options to 10th graders. And Department of Ed, K-12, and us were not quick enough on the uptake, and so we printed a document that did not mention that. And it became a concern to schools out there. And then we went the extra mile to send out updated pages and so forth, and when we do the new publication, we will print it. But it was a mistake. We try to avoid those mistakes, and if those are the two worst mistakes we've had, I think we're doing pretty well. So, Madam Chair, I'd leave it to that and try to answer questions.
Thank you very much, Commissioner. And I do remember that 10th grade thing because I worked hard with Jen Olson to get that passed, so thanks for correcting it. We're excited about that change. So, questions for Commissioner Pogemiller? Senator Klassen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Not necessarily a question, but just to echo your words, Madam Chair, I've found Commissioner Pogemiller to always be available and open, and really appreciate the work that his staff has done. They've been extremely helpful, so thank you, Commissioner.
Thank you, and it is, Madam Chair and Senator, it is the staff. It's amazing. You know, I was here for 30 years. I have learned so much in the last 3 years about how things really work that it's pretty shocking. Be humble. My suggestion is be humble as a senator. There is a lot of stuff going on that you go, really? And it's good. These employees are unbelievable.
Every day to be humble.
Yeah, Senator Nelson.
Just one more comment. I really appreciate hearing that the updated handbook will include the updated laws about PSEO, and hopefully it will include not just the new language about its options for 10th graders, but also the fact that transportation costs are covered as well. So I'd like to just make sure that the full language regarding the PSEO options and what's available along with that, books are covered as well. If all of that could be covered in our next handbook, that'd be wonderful.
We will do it.
Thank
we'll
you
do
so
it.
Much.
It's, we fixed the website, and we'll double-check it now based on this comment. But,
yes.
Thank you.
Thank you. Transportation and books are the two things. Thank you.
Senator Miller.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I just want to echo Senator Claussen's remarks, and I want to tell the Commissioner that I appreciate how accessible you are, and we go to a lot of different events, and I don't remember this so much prior to you, but you're at those events, especially when they're higher ed related, and your staff is fantastic. So thank you for the work that you're doing.
Thank you.
Very good. So before we entertain a motion, did you want to introduce your family who's here?
Well, my life partner, Jill Griffiths, is here with me. We didn't. We decided the kids did. We didn't take the kids out of school this year.
Okay. Welcome,
I had a
Jill.
Joke about that, but Jill told me don't do that.
Welcome, Jill. Thanks for being here. Okay, good. Well, because we all know that any to do any job in state government, it takes not just those of us here, but our families behind the scenes. And so we do appreciate the families. So who would like to make the motion?
So
Senator Claussen moves to confirm Commissioner Pogemiller's and move to the floor with recommendation to confirm. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion is adopted.
Thank you, members. Madam Chair, thank you so much.
Thank you very much. So now, if Michelle Uford would come forward. It's great to see you here, Michelle. Michelle is going to give us an update on the Higher Education Career Advisors pilot, which we passed 2 years ago.
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm very happy to be here.
Welcome.
I feel quite at home, in fact, talking about this project. This is not the first time that I've been here. And before I begin, I just wanted to point out, I believe you have in your packets a menu of services that we are offering through our HECAP pilot in the Northeast region. And I'll refer to that just to give you a little bit of background and context of the activities that we've undertaken in our particular pilot up in the Northeast region. So we're a year and a half through this two-year pilot right now, and my organization, the Northeast Minnesota Office of Job Training, is a partner in the Minnesota Workforce Center system in that seven-county Arrowhead region of Minnesota. And it's our business to help people figure out how they fit in the economy, how to help youth figure out what to do with the rest of their lives. We've been doing this work for decades under very specific programming with very specific eligibility criteria. It's very much in our wheelhouse, the career exploration and career planning. And what this pilot has allowed us to do is basically share that expertise with the people who really need it most, and that's students in high school today. Regardless of those eligibility criteria, while very much well-intentioned, really do limit the work that we can do outside of opportunities like this. So thank you so much for recognizing that this is a great opportunity for our system. And so what we've been doing over the last year and a half, and really the year prior is when we first started doing this work, we were offering services to local school districts to help their students figure out what to do with the rest of their lives. We decided to brand this Northeast Career Adventure. We felt that we wanted to steer clear of the bureaucratic Northeast Minnesota Office of Job Training moniker and make it a little bit more splashy, so we have the logo and the colors you see there before you, which has really gone over well.
Sure.
And has really helped us to establish this program as a standalone resource for schools without any bureaucracy or governmental strings. So it's been really wonderful. And essentially what we're doing for local school districts is providing resources in two different categories, and you'll see those outlined on your menu. But the first is sitting down with students on an individual, one-on-one basis and talking about career planning from scratch. 9.9 times out of 10, students aren't really giving a lot of thought to what they should do with themselves after high school. They're mostly thinking of what's going on Friday night, let alone what they're going to do after graduation. And so we start from the very beginning. We administer a myriad of different career assessments that take a look at an individual's interests, personalities, ability, and help them narrow down that field of occupations that would suit them. But we take it one step further in helping connect to actual occupations in our region that are needed in the economy. So it's not so much, here's a set of occupations that would be good for you, student, go forth and explore and figure it out. But we help them make the connection to real-life opportunities in the Northeast region and in the state and globally for sure. But, you know, obviously we're trying to retain as many of our future workers as we possibly can. And really, as a system, we're very well-suited to do that. We are very well-connected to our local business community, to higher ed, and I'll talk about a little bit of that later. But we also help students figure out, once they kind of narrow down their field of occupations, we can help them with the exploration of those, setting up informational interviews with people in the field, connecting them with online resources where they can learn a little bit more about that occupation or industry. But then we talk about post-secondary training, where the programs are, what their outcomes are. You know, we fund training day in and day out through our traditional workforce center programs, so we know which ones actually result in a good job. And we know which ones are more effective than others, so we can advise on that score as well. And at this point, I'd like to point out that we emphasize with students that we know it's not necessarily realistic for every student to pursue a four-year degree. But we do say every student needs to do something after high school. So rather than saying it's a bachelor's or nothing, we provide a lot of different information on trade and technical occupations, apprenticeships. There's lots of different opportunities out there, but we emphasize the importance of that training after high school, and we help them connect the dots. And then we can help them work out how to pay for it as well. There are lots of different programs that can pay for tuition through the traditional workforce center programs, but we're also aware of the scholarships and financial aid applications and all those different mechanisms that are available for students to pay for post-secondary training. One of the things that we've discovered in our region as we've done this work is that there's a big misconception that post-secondary training is unattainable. It's too expensive. I didn't go to college. You probably aren't going to go to college. So we really do a lot of dispelling of that myth and help families realize how they can actually make this work. And we all in this room know that it's very possible. So it's nice to be in the position of helping spread the word. And we also help kids learn how to conduct an effective job search. It's very competitive out there right now. There's a lot more openings than there are qualified job seekers, and so students and youth are in a very unique position. Youth unemployment rates are the highest they've ever been. So we help those individual students figure out how they present themselves to an employer, how to really play up their skills and the things that they like to do. And many times that results in a great after-school job or a summer job, a myriad of opportunities to get out there in the working world. So then the second category of services that we've provided through this is workshops and activities for groups, classes of students most likely, or most often. But sometimes we've been doing after-school groups, career exploration groups. Because of this work, we've actually been invited to design a number of different regional youth-focused career exploration events with our initiative foundations and with our local economic development organizations, and it's really opened up a very wide field of activity for us because of this work. We've developed a number of different fun games and activities that are based on things like Pictionary and Deal or No Deal and all those things. We have a little career exploration spin on it just to get kids excited and interested in it. We've also developed a four-part Navigating the Business Culture series, which has really become one of the flagship products of this particular pilot. And we did that in response to the very common complaint we hear from local employers that kids today, they don't know what we want, they don't know how to behave, they don't know how to communicate. And so we developed this four-part series that talks about the different cultures that students operate in that they're not cognizant of outside of school. So we talk about the culture of school, of home, and then the work culture and how that differs from what they're used to. We also cover the different generations in the workplace. Northeast Minnesota has one of the fastest aging populations in the state, and we've got an unprecedented mix of generations in the workplace today. And oftentimes, we find that students entering those situations don't necessarily know how to communicate with the baby boomer effectively or kind of navigate those different styles of generations. So we talk a lot about that in this Navigating Business Culture. And then we talk about communication on the job, communication and behavioral expectations, just what employers are looking for in terms of a good employee. And then lastly, the changing world of work and acknowledging that what we know today of a workplace will likely very much evolve by the time, you know, they move through it. And so we're preparing them to deal with change and to expect change as they move through the working world. We're also offering financial literacy as a piece of this. We've got another four-part series that's actually based on a Wells Fargo curriculum that we offer 9, 10, 11, and 12th grade in a progressive series. We've done a lot of e-mentoring with our partner Best Prep, which is a junior achievement type of organization based here in the metro. And that's where we're taking a group of students in a class and pairing them with an equal number of professionals in the local business. They exchange emails. They get together once during the course of this eight-week program. And it's just a really great way to expose students to adults that don't have a personal stake in what they think the student should do. And it's a really wonderful thing. We've had about 150 students move through the e-mentor program because of this pilot. So it's really been a wonderful, wonderful experience. And then we also help schools plan school-based career fairs, where we bring in the employers that we're so well connected with to learn about jobs that may be available, to learn about the industry and what their future needs are. And it's really just all an effort to better educate students about what they're looking at in life after high school. And like I said earlier, this is our work. This is what we've done. So it's great to be able to share that. Some outcomes, we're a year and a half through this program right now. As an organization, the Office of Job Training has served over 1,300 individual students. These are students that now have career plans. They now have an idea of where they fit into the economy and their post-secondary options and the whole, you know, mapping out their future. That's just in the last year and a half. That doesn't even count the first year that we started doing this program. And right now we're working with students in 36 different schools in six counties in our region. So we really have a very wide reach. Schools access resources at different levels. In some cases, we're working with whole classes of students and offering very comprehensive services. In other cases, districts ask us to come in and just kind of piecemeal what they need. And we very intentionally structured it that way. We didn't want to walk into any particular district and say, here's what we're going to do for you. It was more, here's what we can do for you. Tell us what you need, what works with what you already offer, and how we fit in. And we've also been very clear about we're not trying to usurp the job of guidance counselors. But we know these folks are way overworked, and they don't have time to deal with the career stuff, and that's our wheelhouse anyway. So it's really been great. We have four sites operating the HECAP pilot right now, and over the past year and a half, or I'm sorry, just this year alone, so from September to the end of December, I believe, over 1,500 students, just in the first half of the school year in these four pilot sites, individual students have been served. Over the course of the whole year and a half of this pilot, almost 3,000 individual students in these four pilot regions now have some idea of what they should do with their lives. So these four pilot sites, in addition to the Northeast region, are Stearns-Benton, the St. Cloud area, rural Minnesota SEP, and you'll hear from my colleague Dan Wenner on that today, as well as Hennepin County. So we have a nice mix of metro and rural trying this work out, and it's really worked out resoundingly well. In terms of the group workshops, there's been over 14,000 students that have been touched in some way by career planning guidance and resources through group settings, through this pilot, four pilot sites in the last year and a half. So just, I mean, the reach that we've been able to make with just scratching the surface really has been, I believe, very tremendous. And as I said before, I believe that we're perfectly suited as a workforce center system to handle this work. You know, education, their wheelhouse is academics. It's teaching math and science and civics and all those very important subjects. Our wheelhouse is career guidance. That's what we do. And so it has really been an excellent, excellent opportunity to share what we know. And I mentioned just our connections with the business community and higher ed and economic development. It's been a really tremendous opportunity for our system to show what we can do. So I thank you very much for the opportunity.
Well, Michelle, thank you very much for what you brought to the opportunity. I had asked our staff if they could remind me how much we spent. And so it looks like this pilot was at $320,000?
Yes, I believe over the two years.
$350,000, I'm sorry.
Yep. It was about $80,000, $85,000 a pilot.
Yep. Yep. So outstanding value for the kind of outcomes you've generated. And I think, members, I want to make sure you know that you're going to be now seeing two bills that take the concept of what we're hearing about today and really expand that. And so that's why I wanted you to start, so members could get a sense of what can happen if we go down this road. But I'm really, really impressive. So questions? Senator Klassen.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. It sounds like you're doing a lot of work in the schools.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And then I have a question. Out of those initial contacts that you have, you also offer some individual services. I'm wondering what the follow-up has been with individual students then coming to you after mm-hmm. those initial contacts.
Mm-hmm. Michelle. More often than not, we are meeting with those students more than once. So it's the initial contact where usually there's an assessment of some kind involved, which is kind of our springboard of working with them in a follow-up basis. And in speaking with my staff, I would say the average number of meetings with a particular student is about 2 to 3, but they can be as many as a weekly. I mean, it really depends on the student. It depends on the drive of the student. But very much more often than not, it's more than just a one consultation.
Any other questions? Ms. Uford, am I saying that right?
It's Ufford. Ufford. That's okay. You can say it however you want.
That's
to.
Why I called you Michelle instead.
That's fine.
Ms. Ufford, I have a question for you. The space, when you are in the schools, do they give you a room, or how is that handled?
Absolutely. Usually, yes, we do have a designated space. It varies by district. I mean, in 36 different schools, there's almost 36 different ways that this can look. In many cases, we are housed in the corner of a library. In many cases, schools have an open classroom that we can use or some sort of office space. But it is always on site at the school. We're not bringing students to the workforce. We do bring students to the workforce center, but the vast majority of the work happens right at the school.
Very
and in
good.
One case, if I could just say quickly, which I think is a model that is really worth looking at, is in Grand Rapids specifically. That's a district that's a bit more ahead of the curve than many in our region. They have their own career center on site at the high school that is actually partially staffed by my career counselors. So
Wow. Really,
that's, I think, probably the shining star in our region about how the collaboration between schools and the workforce.
Very interesting, because we talk about the importance of the co-location in our post-secondary institutions, but you're taking it to the next level, so that's wonderful. Senator Kent?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I remember when we first discussed this, and this is just such an exciting opportunity, I think, because particularly the ability to talk about the real local workforce futures and help map those out for students so that they know realistically if they want to stay in that community what they need to be prepared for, I think is so incredibly valuable and such an important part of the equation. One of the concerns that I've heard addressed about this is that typically the people who work in workforce centers are used to working with adults, and now this is more, and like I said, this is more of a question. I just want to figure out sort of
Absolutely.
How this is working now that you're seeing it in action. And I see this, you know, you've got programs in here that go down to eighth grade. How is that working, you know, translating this into this younger population?
Thank you, Senator. That's a great question.
Ms. Upper.
I'm glad one that has been asked, because one of the programs that we have traditionally operated, actually there's two different funding streams, but we have been working with youth for decades. We've got the Minnesota Youth Program is one that's administered through Minnesota Workforce Centers, as well as the Federal Workforce Investment Act youth funding stream. And so we've been working with eligible kids, and that's the difference, really, as early as age 14. So working with students and kids is really nothing that's foreign to us. The populations that we work with under those programs have to fit a very specific at-risk eligibility criteria. And so the difference is, for us, if I had to name one in terms of our experience working with youth, is that now we're kind of outside the boundaries of having to worry about those barriers.
Okay.
Because we're very barrier-focused on overcoming those difficulties with our traditional youth streams. So this kind of takes that away to a certain extent. But we do have experience there.
And Madam Chair, just a
Senator
quick follow-up. I think that's an interesting, you know, talking about the barriers, because I can imagine in the at-risk population that you're more accustomed to working with, that's a pretty well-defined set of barriers. But I would imagine as you move to a broader population that there are still barriers, but
Oh, yes.
They may take a different form. So I would think that would be interesting. All right. Thank you.
And I know Senator Kent is working on a proposal to augment school counselors in K-12, and so I have thought that we can certainly work together.
Yes.
Yeah, very good. Well, thank you so much for your time and your testimony, and we hope you'll stay to hear the other two bills.
Absolutely. Thank you, Madam Chair.
As you're testifying, so yes, thank you. Good. Senator Saxhog.
Do we have copies of this bill? I don't have one.
420. Is there any other members who do not have Senate File 420 in their packet? Good. Okay. Senator Saxhog.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Today, Senator Weber and I are presenting Senate File 420. And this bill is a bipartisan culmination of our Rural Senate Task Force, and I'd like to thank the onset Senators Weber, Jensen, Rosen, Gazalka, Eakin, Dames, and Dahl for their hard work in the summer and the fall of this year. That group identified workforce training as the number one issue affecting economic growth throughout rural Minnesota. This bill will connect the dots between businesses looking to expand training programs and high school students by funding our rural workforce centers to hire rural career counseling coordinators. With us today is Dan Winter, Executive Director of the Rural Minnesota Concentrated Employment Program, to give a brief presentation and help answer any questions the committee may have. But before that, I want to turn it over to Senator Weber to give his thoughts on the proposal.
Thank you.
Senator Weber.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. It's a pleasure for me to be here today and to talk to you about this issue. Certainly in those instances, as you have well heard over the past years, in greater Minnesota, we have at many times lost a number of jobs. And those businesses that have remained and are successful today face a severe shortage of having people to work in their respective places of employment. And at the same time, I think many times we have arrived at a situation where when we took a shift in education in Minnesota and actually diminished a lot of the vocational career training that we had in our secondary school system, we wound up having a couple of generations of young people that graduated from school not necessarily even fully aware of what opportunities actually were in their own home communities. This bill, I think, offers an opportunity through the workforce training centers, which have had historically a tremendous record in success of working with our school systems in order to provide that career counseling that, as has been previously mentioned today, is not always readily available through no fault of the counselors, but through the workload that has fallen upon them with the many other social issues that have beset our families over the years. And it allows them to make them more fully aware of what's available and also provide them an outlet and a plan of action that they can follow in conjunction with our businesses in rural Minnesota to actually get into that workforce. And so we look forward to being able to move forward and provide opportunities both for our young people as well as the employers of our communities. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Weber.
Thank you, Senator Saxhog. Senator Vonoff, my name is Dan Winter, and I'm the director of the Rural Minnesota Concentrated Employment Program, which I'll refer to as CEP throughout the presentation. But let me say first, it's really exciting to be here today to talk about this initiative that has so much potential to enhance our workforce. Just so you get a kind of a fixture of where CEP is, we provide workforce development services in 19 counties in northern and west central Minnesota. This territory stretches from Lake of the Woods to Morris and from Little Falls to Moorhead. This 20,000 square mile territory is also known as Workforce Area 2, and we assist people obtain the training they need to get work, from how to find a job to job specific skills training. And one of the handouts you should have in front of you is a folder. There's a map in there. One of the maps is outlined in yellow, and that's the area that CEP provides workforce development services in. There's another map in there that shows all of the 16 workforce areas throughout Minnesota. We're all led by a workforce investment board, which is made up a majority of employers, which provides strategic guidance. We all provide similar services, but those services are customized to meet local labor market needs. What Senate File 420 in particular includes initiatives that will greatly enhance the ability of SEP and other greater Minnesota workforce areas, as well as metro workforce areas, to address the workforce needs of youth and local employers. Funding is included in 420 for rural workforce system coordinators. And while workforce areas have been successful in bringing together local entities, including education, government, nonprofits, employers, and workers, to identify and coordinate on workforce issues, the distance involved means that there's always more work that could be done to align activities. The addition of the regional coordinators would significantly bolster our efforts to coordinate services by providing and assisting businesses in locating workforce development resources, identifying all workforce development strategy and initiatives offered throughout the regions, and connecting entities which can contribute to increasing the skills and availability of workers. Perhaps most importantly, though, the information garnered by the regional coordinators could be utilized by the local workforce areas and their employer-led boards to share best practices both throughout the region and the state. Among the biggest frustrations for employers in my area, and Michelle talked about this, is the lack of a work ethic among many of the young people that they want to hire. In my mind, this is a skills issue, and Senate File 420 includes funding for the Minnesota Youth Program, or MYP. This program is key to providing resources to develop the basic skills for work skills for young people. In MYP, the basic work skills of each participant are evaluated by staff. Skill deficiencies are addressed through individual counseling, curricula, and most importantly, by placing young people in subsidized employment. Working is the best way to learn how to work. It is a sad fact that labor force participation rates for 16 to 19-year-olds fell from nearly 70% in 2000 to just over 46% in 2013. The unemployment rate for youth has stayed stubbornly high despite economic growth the last several years. Without MYP, these young people will be delayed in their ability to get a job in which they can develop basic work skills. Youth development is economic development in order to make sure that Minnesota stays economically and globally competitive. Minnesota will need all hands on deck to fill positions that will be left vacant by the droves of impending retirements and to meet the demands of our local economy. Unemployment rates among youth are especially a concern during the summer as more enter the workforce. Minnesota is in danger of losing an entire generation of youth who may not gain work experience. Again, work experience is critical to future success in the labor force. The number one predictor of future success in the workforce is early exposure to work. Work readiness training is focused on employer-driven behaviors such as attendance, punctuality, teamwork, communication skills, and problem solving, something we all take for granted but again is a learned behavior. Feedback on attainment of skills comes from the supervisor and counselor. I remember the first feedback I got from my dad, who when I was walking out the door to interview for my first job was, "You're not going out looking like that, are you?" It was the 70s, so you can imagine. The skills youth learn through MYP are those employers desperately need, again, such as interpersonal communication, ethical behavior, decision-making, fostering curiosity, innovation, teamwork, positive attitudes, being on time, and problem solving. So MYP also provides an opportunity to apply skills learned in the classroom in an actual work situation too, and our job counselors, our youth coordinators work to do that. Workforce areas are particularly well positioned to implement these programs, the basic work skills development, because we have relationships with local work sites which can be utilized to develop the work skills. We have in-depth knowledge of local labor markets and the occupational needs and opportunities in key industries. And the Minnesota Youth Program offers services in all 16 workforce areas in all 87 counties. So you're going to reach the whole state with this. In addition, we leverage significant additional federal and local resources and partnerships in order to prepare youth for the workplace. MYP makes an impact. It provides an opportunity for youth to develop job-ready skills. In fiscal year ending June 30th, 2014, the program helped over 3,000 youth gain skills needed by employers, of which 38% were youth of color and 41% were youth with disabilities. Every MYP participant receives work safety training, while 94% successfully completed the program and achieved work readiness goals. More could be done, however. The summer program in Workforce Area 2, my area, is down from 1,500 kids 5 years ago to 254 now, primarily because of a reduction in federal resources. Senate File 420 would allow over four times the current number of young people across the state to develop those vital work skills and gain essential work experience. 420 also includes provisions to expand one of our core activities, and that's career exploration and planning. I'm just going to touch on that because Michelle did just a great job of describing it. But again, this service has been provided to youth who meet low income criteria for 45 years. 2 years ago, led by this body, the legislature provided funding to allow several workforce areas, again, to expand career exploration and planning to any high school student regardless of income. In this pilot, the SEP area, which we run in Clay County, our staff, who are also Workforce Center staff, work with high school students in Moorhead, the Dilworth, Glynn, and Felton School District, Barnesville, Yule, and Hitterdahl School District, and the Red River Area Learning Center. Career counseling and knowledge of demand occupations increases the likelihood of youth making well-informed career choices regarding which post-secondary institutions to attend. Workforce Center staff are able to focus on career exploration and planning, allowing high schools to focus on education and the counselors to handle the crisis situations. We use our knowledge and expertise to assist students to identify that career in an occupation in demand, which are those that are growing and have a good job. Our staff then work with the student to identify the steps needed to enter that career and develop a plan. The result is a plan which facilitates entry into a field which local employers need workers. Students identify the training which they need to enter that career choice. This reduces the expense of false starts in post-secondary education, which as a parent of recently, you know, graduated college students, I appreciate. Increases the pool of available workers for local employers and reduces the time youth spend drifting in their 20s, which so many people like me experienced. Results are, for our part of the pilot project, are over 18 months of this pilot, we provided outreach to over 2,500 high school students. We've provided group activities to nearly 1,900 youth, and we've had provided individual services to 450 youth. What we found is that one Workforce Center staff can provide interest assessment, skills identification, labor market information, career exploration, and plan development with 250 students. And in addition, the staff person can provide group sessions on job search strategies, completing the FAFSA, making college applications, and what other resources are available. Workforce Center staff are able to use their knowledge and expertise with students. Schools appreciate having Workforce Center staff provide this service, and students are able to identify careers that are in demand that meet their aptitudes and interests and then develop plans to prepare for those careers. And there are a couple of unsolicited letters in here on the back of the right side of this from two of the schools that we're working with telling us how valuable the service is, and then one success story we have from a student. And even if you don't look at the rest, those are always fun to read, so take a look, ask questions if you want. The result, though, of this whole thing is that by the time youth leave high school, they have a career goal and a plan to achieve that goal, including an appropriate post-secondary education choice. Funds included in SF-420 would build on the success of the pilot projects and allow career counseling to be implemented across the state. Okay, I want to leave you with one final thought, so I am wrapping up here. It's the foundational philosophy of rural Minnesota SEP that work is the key to a successful life. Skilled workers are key to business success. Skilled workers and thriving businesses are key to strong rural economies, and the strength of Minnesota's rural economy is dependent on the strength of the greater Minnesota economy, and SF-420 would go a long way towards ensuring the strength of both rural Minnesota and the entire state. Thank you.
Thank you very much. So questions for Senator Saxon? Senator Kent.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate this bill and what you're doing, and I think this is great, and thank you for the information and the testimony. And I really just want to point one thing out in this more global conversation about counseling high school students. From page 8 of your testimony, Mr. Wenner, you pointed out that you found out that one staff can provide all these services with 250 students, and that's consistent with the High School Counselors Association recommended ratio as well. So I just, that's an independent confirmation of that. So thank you.
Senator Torres-Ray.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the senators or the testifier, I'm curious about kind of the effort or how we could include some language in the bill that brings us more information about the barriers that some of the individuals face. My understanding is that we kind of need to open opportunities and create, kind of be more creative with respect to opening opportunities for expansion of some industries in rural Minnesota. Because part of the challenge, I think, is, you know, to what extent do we ask a counselor to open an opportunity for a young person that is just simply not there? And so in the process, I think that we are going to learn a lot about, you know, some industries that are creative, you know, creating innovative opportunities, others that are just really not doing what it takes. And I think it will be very important for us to document that so that we can grow those industries and those capacities that actually open opportunities. And I don't see that language here. So I was thinking, Senator Saxog, that line 219, you have any recommendations for changes to workforce development. I kind of like that line, and I would like to say, including, you know, the a report on barriers encountered by people seeking jobs or industries, something along those lines, because I think that we are going to learn a lot by really trying to figure out what are the barriers that we are encountering. And I don't know, I presume that you know, the language invites to that, but I would like it to be more clear that we need to know. You know, the counselors are doing their best, but if the jobs are not there, if the industries are not making an effort, we need to know what those barriers are.
Senator Saxon.
Sure, Senator Torres-Ray, of course, that language is put in there specifically for generally what you say, is so that we'll be picking up information as we go along. But I think that our rural task force found out in a hurry that what's going on in rural Minnesota isn't necessarily a shortage of jobs. In fact, we have businesses that are willing to expand, particularly in our regional centers. Our problem is that we don't have a trained, educated workforce, generally because we feel that many of our workforce or potential workforce don't understand what's available. And in fact, the biggest single problem we have is out-migration of a workforce, a problem that's unique to rural Minnesota. And so I think it's pretty obvious by all that's been done here that's what we're after. We're after getting our people from rural Minnesota in whatever situation we can, so we can counsel them and tell them what is available for them with their skill sets. And whether that's being a diesel mechanic or a nuclear physicist, you know, we don't care. We just want to get everybody. We want to get the square pegs in the square holes, so to speak.
Thank you,
Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, this does help close that gap. We have a gap between the jobs available and the skills.
Exactly.
That our students have. And we have to start young. So I really appreciate the fact that this focuses on really the students. And I like the interconnection, too. Sometimes we try and do education or career education in silos, and that doesn't work very well. So I think this is a really good proposal for those reasons. I just have a question about the reach of the bill. Is it statewide? I think there are 16 or is it 18 workforce centers statewide. Would this bill then apply to all of the workforce centers in the state?
Senator Saxon.
Madam Chair, Senator Nelson, this But what we emphasized, of course, is rural Minnesota, and we only emphasized 9 of the workforce centers that are covering rural Minnesota. That being said, we didn't take all money. We just took, I mean, we just are want to be involved with that portion of the money which should go to rural Minnesota. Yep.
So Senator Nelson,
could you list the 9 workforce centers then that this bill would provide funds for? Yes.
Senator Nelson, there's I think the easiest way to do it would be to look at the folder here, and there's a map on the left-hand side, not the right, which lists it's called Title I-B Workforce Service Areas. Yep, yes. That's the one. And there's a slight difference, just to make clarification, between workforce centers and workforce areas. There's 16 workforce areas, but I think it's 46 workforce centers. So a center would be an office, much, I suppose, like a school would be within a school district. But then the district would be the workforce area. So the 9 workforce areas that the regional coordinators would focus on would be Northeast Minnesota, Workforce Area 3, Northwest PIC, which is Workforce Area 1, Rural Minnesota SEP, which is Workforce Area 2, Stearns-Benton, Workforce Area 17, Central Minnesota, which is Workforce Area 5, Southwest Minnesota PIC, which is Workforce Area 6, South Central, which is Workforce Area 7, Southeastern Minnesota, Workforce Area 8, and Winona County, which is Workforce Area 18. Let me explain something. There are 18 numbers. The numbers go up to 18, but no workforce area wanted to be 13. Okay. So you don't find that on here. And like some years ago, two of Ramsey County and St. Paul combined into one, and we just didn't change the numbering system. So,
thank you very much.
You're welcome.
And Senator Nelson, the language of the bill where it talks about each workforce service area located outside as defined in da-da-da-da, that actually, while we don't see it spelled out, that does refer to the ones they're talking about. So,
thank you very much.
Yeah.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
And members, the bill following Senator Saxhog's is the bill that I'm introducing that actually covers the whole state, but in a different way. And so I wanted to have the committee be able to hear both bills and actually, the same testifier talk about them, so that as you go forward, Senator Saxhog, that you can decide what approach seems to make sense, and we can, and the committee can just weigh in on that too. But I love the coordinator position that you lay out. I think that that makes a lot of sense. Any other questions? Very good. So go ahead, Senator Saxhog.
I was just going to ask you if somebody could move the.
Yep, absolutely.
I'll be glad to move.
Yep, and so we're going to move the. Senator Nelson moves Senate File 420 be recommended to pass and referred to Finance. So all those in favor, say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion is adopted. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Thank
Senator
you,
Weber and Senator Sachs.
Senator Boniff, welcome to our committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And you are presenting today Senate File 472.
Right. And, Mr. Chair, I do have an amendment.
Very good. I believe it's the A3 amendment.
Yes, Mr. Chair. And this is not our first stop, so it's not an author's amendment. So I'm happy to explain the amendment.
Please do so. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members, this bill was heard at a prior stop, and the School Boards Association came to us and with a expressed a concern that we were directing school districts to provide space for the Workforce Center personnel. And so they wanted to make sure that there was flexibility in that that direction. And so originally we talked about inserting the words as practicable, but then our council, who does a smoother job than that, suggests that on page 1, line 19, delete the word office and insert a room or other. And so it just gives districts that flexibility. So that's the nature of the amendment.
Okay. Senator Bonneff moves the E3 amendment. Any questions?
Please.
Senator Miller moves the E3 amendment. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Very good. Amendment has been adopted. Please proceed.
Thank you. So, members, you heard the wonderful testimony about how the pilot went. And so I, like Senator Saxhog and Senator Weber, have been determined that we take the learning of that pilot and bring it to scale. And so I've been working with the workforce centers. I'm here with Ann Kilzer, who's the Minnesota Workforce with the Minnesota Workforce Council Association, and Michelle Ufford. Upward. I'm sorry, it's like a mental block. Upward. And Dan Winner. And so so I would like them to address the bill because they really gave us the recommendation. But the goal is to take what we know is a terrible counselor shortage in the school districts and say there's more than one way to address it. Number one, we must address it with regard to the counselors, but then the piece that affects our work here in the Higher Ed Committee is how can we do a better job exposing our young people to all the opportunities earlier, make sure they pick the appropriate path for themselves as we look at our challenges with regard to debt, with regard to graduation rate, with regard to job shortages when they don't choose technical education because they think the only path is a four-year, when really they might be living in an area that a technical degree would be so much more valuable and would give them a career that they would actually love. And so for all those reasons, this bill says there's a role for our workforce centers on a statewide basis. And so we went to them and said, okay, if you were to go statewide, what would that look like? And that is the bill before you. So I would begin with Ann.
Thank you, Senator Bonneff. Mr. Chair and members, you already heard from Dan and Michelle kind of what the pilot projects have been doing with the funding that was appropriated 2 years ago. I believe in your packets there's
Ms. Kilzer, could you identify yourself?
My apologies, sir. Ann Kilzer with the Workforce Council Association.
Thank you.
I believe in your packets there's a report that actually outlines the results from all four pilot projects. And as the director of the statewide association working with Dan and Michelle and all of their counterparts, I can say that the 12 folks who didn't get funded yet are very jealous. They're very interested in doing a lot of this type of work so that we can take this statewide. There's a lot of support within our system, and some of the workforce service areas who haven't already received funding in anticipation of the possibility of receiving funding have already been talking with local school districts and getting a lot of support, a lot of requests for assistance like this. So we're just very supportive of efforts to take this initial idea statewide.
Michelle?
Okay, thank you. I would just like to perhaps reference a specific piece of this bill in line 112 and 113 where it talks about high growth in in-demand occupations and the salary profiles of those jobs and the credentials and other training desired. The Workforce Center system is the system that generates that information. So we are very well equipped with that information right now, and the learning curve is non-existent to be able to share that information with students. And the other thing I'd like to add about the importance of doing this work is referring back to the World's Best Workforce legislation that was passed, requiring districts to, by no later than ninth grade, have a career plan for students moving forward. And that's definitely one of the pieces that in my neck of the woods we've been involved with our school districts in helping them develop those plans that are required now, but also helping add a little bit more value to what students are currently getting in terms of the plans themselves. Most students in our state are going through some sort of assessment process already, but more often than not, they're given the results, and there's really not a lot of follow-up or meat to what that means or context around what that could mean for any individual's future. And that's certainly a lot of what we've been doing through all the HECAP pilots as school districts are working through the world's best workforce legislation. So to me, this really adds – it's connecting to public systems, and it's leveraging resources and expertise that's already out there rather than heaping any more into school districts that are already kind of floundering in terms of this legislation. So I really do believe that this gives us an opportunity to help districts really make some meaningful work out of that legislation.
Mr. Winter?
Yeah. Dan Winter, rural Minnesota SEP. We're ready to take this the HECAP project statewide. We've had discussions in our Workforce Council Association, of which Ann's the director. All of the 16 workforce areas have agreed this is a good idea. Michelle's been great in and I have too, and all the HECAP projects have been sharing information already with our colleagues on how this works, what issues we might run into, how we can make this work. What they, of course, lack is funding to take this onward. Schools are, again, interested in this. I think the primary concern that we've run into, with the schools is they're glad to see us there because the counselors are glad to see us there because they're afraid that they're letting the important piece of career counseling drop because they need to deal with crisis situations. So somebody, a student will come to them with ready to make a career choice, probably in the last part of their senior year, right? And if they're having to deal with, somebody who's about to be kicked out of the house or something, they have to put that student off. Our career counselors can focus on this, take that burden. The counselors in the schools are happy to see us there because they know that the job is getting done. So, again, we've had these discussions. We've kept our colleagues up to speed. We're ready to take this statewide, and I just encourage you to support this.
Thank you. Questions from the committee? Senator Krent.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Bonhoff and Mr. Winter, I really appreciate both of you addressing the issue of how important it is that guidance counselors work as teams with the workforce counselors, because I do think there is a very important natural fit there of what you uniquely bring in terms of regional knowledge about workforce that can augment what the guidance counselors are doing. But that teamwork is an important component. And one of the things that I've encountered in my work on this issue is a counselor at a school, high school, where there is a huge emphasis on college and career preparation. And the students are lined up at the counselor's doors trying to get help filling out applications and FAFSA forms and all that good stuff. And I sort of posed the scenario that Mr. Winter just described, where counselors are often so focused on some of the crisis things that they don't have the luxury, if you will, of time to focus on college and career guidance. And what she told me about was what they run into at this school is it's on a second or third discussion about college forms that they uncover some of the anxiety that might be going on or some of the behavioral issues. And so I guess I would just want to make sure that teamwork is there to make sure that those things can be picked up if those conversations are having with a workforce counselor as opposed to a licensed guidance counselor and those referrals are made properly. Can you address how that would work? Ms. Ufford?
Absolutely, Mr. Chair, members. We encounter that quite a bit. Of course, we're in a rural area. It's perhaps a little bit different setting, but we always work hand-in-hand with the guidance counselors, and in fact, in many instances, they're the ones that are asking us to come in, and we are jointly delivering presentations, and there's always an open communication between the two. We were very, very careful, as I mentioned earlier, when we started this initiative to be very, very clear that we were there to help guidance counselors in whatever capacity they needed us to. And so they've been very open and very grateful, and I am a huge believer in collaboration, which is why I think that this is a good idea to begin with. So even down at the micro level, yes, we absolutely work with not only counselors but teachers. We've also found a very, very important connection. In many cases, teachers are referring students to us for career exploration services, and if something gets tipped off to us in those conversations, we are feeding back to the teachers and working together in terms of how do we make sure that we're providing those students resources that we may not have through the workforce center and vice versa. So that's a very commonplace practice for us.
Thank you.
I have a similar question. And one of the key pieces of a high school counselor and working with students is to work on career education, what are your future goals, but then also developing a career path aligning their program of studies, what classes are you going to take. And in this process, do you have a formal process of bridging those two connecting pieces that are so critical in developing that career pathway?
Mr. Chair, members, I don't know if we have a formal process per se. But one of the things that we do try to accomplish, and it really depends on at what age we're hitting the student, frankly, we're trying to get younger and younger, providing them more time to connect with the right classes in high school. As Dan mentioned, many times it's senior year, and we're just talking to them now about what they should do with their next steps. But that's really one of the themes that we operate under when we're talking to 9th and 10th graders, 11th graders even, when we're talking about future possibilities, drawing the connections between those and the curriculum available in the school. And that's really where the connections with counselors and teachers are very, very important, because obviously they know what's available through their districts better than we do. And so that's really another piece of why it's important to stay connected to those referring adults, whether they be the guidance counselor or the teacher.
Just go ahead, Mr. Winter, and then I have a follow-up.
Just if I might add to that, you know, what we're doing is and I think Michelle's doing this too, but essentially when we identify what career a student might be interested in going to, what we're going to say is to them is, have you thought about taking these high school classes? Now, we're not probably going to do a plan with them, because students have plans with their counselors if they need them already in high school, but we're going to connect with that in school, the school district counselor, you know, to talk to them about what we might have recommended that the student take, so they can incorporate with whatever plan they might have. We tend to focus more on the post-secondary steps at this point. The idea being that if you're going to do some exploration of what you might like to do, it's better to do it in high school than pay tuition to do it in college and change majors like a couple of us did a couple of times. So that's where we've been focusing with this project.
Thank you. Well, you had mentioned in your presentation about reaching down into 8th grade, 9th grade, and so on. And I think it would be critical, maybe develop a form at least, and as they develop their likes or things that they'd like to see is a future career, that they can then turn that over to the school counselor and say, okay, what courses might I be benefiting from if I would take this? So I'm just concerned that there needs to be that connection taking place, so that we're really advising students correctly to prepare themselves for that post-secondary step.
Sure.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions from the committee?
Mr. Chair, I would just have a question actually for perhaps Ms. Kilzer after, or any of you, maybe even Mr. Winter, who was more involved with Senator Saxhog's bill, if you could just comment on perhaps the synergy or you know, after now hearing both, any thoughts about that?
Mr. Chair and members, I think the biggest difference between Senator Bonoff's bill and Senator Saxhog's bill is, as you've heard, they fund very similar activities, the same activities, in fact. The difference is that Senator Bonoff's bill would be a standalone appropriation for these specific activities. Senator Saxhog's bill, the funding would actually go through the existing Minnesota Youth Program and be additional funding through that existing program. In that case, the each of the local workforce service areas would have the opportunity to decide how much would go towards traditional Minnesota youth program employment activities versus how much they would focus on the outreach to schools with the career counseling. So it would be a local decision. In Senator Bonhoff's bill, this funding would be specifically to be utilized for the outreach to schools. I hope that makes sense. If anybody has questions, I'm happy to answer them.
Thank you for clarifying how they would work together or and what their differences might be as well. So thank you. Any testimony from people attending the meeting? Okay. With that, Senator Bonhoff, we need to refer this to the Education Committee.
Very good.
All right. Senator Franson moves that we take Senate File 472 and we re-refer to the Education Committee. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Same sign. Very good. We'll move
Thank
ahead.
You.
Is she? Do you want me to adjourn it? Yeah. As acting chair, we do not have any additional business, so I will adjourn the committee.